Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today we have a return guest, somebody I'm looking forward to speaking with again. She was a wealth of knowledge last time she was on the show. And since that time, I've become a lot more cognizant of EMF and 5G and all the things that we surround ourselves with. I'm actually seeing patients in my practice, and it's been really interesting to educate them and see the difference. And we're going to speak with Ms. Kathy Cook. She's been working as an integrative health coach since 2014. She's a board certified holistic nutritionist with the National Association of Nutritional Professionals, as well as one of the sector's most knowledgeable people on the subject of building biology. And, you know, Ms. Cook, I want to thank you for taking the time to come back on the show. But since you were last on, I've really become a lot more aware, and I've taken personal steps towards protecting my health. And I've been able to be actually a sounding board and a wealth of knowledge for my patients. So thank you, because you gave me tools that I didn't even know that I could use.
Well, that's great. Well, first of all, yeah, thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure to speak with you and share this information. And that makes me just beyond happy to hear that you are becoming more knowledgeable in the area and using this in your practice. I mean, that's, you know, what having these conversations is all about. So I'm really happy to hear that.
Well, good. I think we can take our next step forward, because this is something that affects everybody. I don't think I can't name anybody who's not affected in some way by it. People who work from home or on their computers all the time, office buildings who've like rewired, all sorts of things. And I've had patients with mold toxicity, and just clearing their environment from all of the wireless products and wireless, toxins, I guess I can put it, they've really improved. So let's start from the beginning. How did you come to this? This is a very unique space, one that it's extremely important to understand.
Yeah, well, you know, like many people, I was having my own health challenges. And I had decades of just, you know, these mysterious chronic symptoms that, of course, nobody could figure out. And it was about 2014, 2015 that I started to pay attention to the possibility of EMF and the environment in general, and you know, questioning whether that could be a factor in my symptoms. And sure enough, when I did a little test by putting my phone in a drawer for a week and turning off my Wi-Fi, committing to not having any radio frequency for a week, I felt dramatically better within 2 days. And I saw a plethora of my symptoms clear up, including tinnitus, or, you know, severe ringing in my ear that I had had for 10 years. And it was literally gone in 2 days after not using a phone. My sleep dramatically improved. My anxiety cleared up. My energy was better. It was just so profound that I could not ignore it. And, you know, to make a long story short, I just dove in and said, if I'm going to, you know, continue to get better and help my clients with their health, because I was practicing as a nutritionist at the time, that I have to know the environmental piece of it. And so then I enrolled with the Building Biology Institute in 2017, and I've been practicing ever since.
Well, I want to confirm and give another example of what you just described. I had a patient with tinnitus, and she was the side where the ringing was on was the side that she kept her phone at her bedside table. And I asked her to just turn that thing off, turn her router off. And I mean, she'd came in pretty much really just anxiety ridden. And it was just such an awesome return visit when she said it's gone. I was like amazed. She was amazed. And it's something I ask all of my patients now. That's how important I feel that it is. Now, you're a nutritionist, so you really understand cellular biology and how the body works. I think you have a leg up when it comes to that compared to most physicians who we barely get taught that. What are some of the things that you find overall, is there something in our diets or the way what we choose to eat that makes us more sensitive to EMF?
Well, that's a great question. It actually goes a little deeper than diet when we're talking about what we would call precursors to why somebody may feel the electromagnetic fields more than someone else. And diet can play a role in the precursors, but the main ones that I see are fairly significant events in someone's life. So a trauma, that could be a physical trauma, like a bump to the head, or concussions, brain traumas, TBIs, they certainly can cause someone to be sensitive. In fact, I know many people that have had just that, a literal bump to the head, and then overnight they became very, very sensitive. It could be an emotional trauma. So we all have emotional traumas and adverse childhood events that can cause us to become sensitive. It could be an infection like Lyme disease, SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, or other kind of, viral, bacterial, parasitic infection. It could be an extreme exposure to EMF. Say you're a lineman or someone that's working in IT and you have exponentially higher exposures or a very high acute exposure to EMF. I even have a colleague who was struck by lightning and then he became highly sensitive. Of course, you mentioned mold. That is a huge precursor. I would say my most severely sensitive clients have had a mold exposure, a pretty dramatic mold exposure, and then they become sensitive after that. There's also chemical exposures. I have one client that used to own a carpet company, and he was invariably exposed to countless toxic chemicals from his profession, and then he became sensitive. So, diet can play a role there, because if we are not eating to support our gut health, our inflammation, our brain health, our infections, all of these things, our sensitivities are going to only increase given that we have these exposures. And then there's also the oxidative stress piece. If we're talking only to diet alone, we know that EMF affects us on a cellular level by causing oxidative stress. And so specifically what it does is it artificially opens our voltage-gated calcium channels, which can allow a flood of calcium ions into the cell, which we don't actually want. We only want a little bit of calcium on the inside. When we get too much, we get this downstream effect of oxidative stress. So if we're not combating that with a diet rich in antioxidants and minerals as well, specifically magnesium, then we're not combating the invariable exposure that most of us get on a daily basis. So that's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, as it's multifactorial, but all of these factors play a really important role.
I think that was an excellent answer, not long-winded at all. And it's so complex, but it all comes down to energy and voltage. And I think I'm learning a lot more about how cellular health, viability, longevity, all depends on how much energy it's able to harness, maintain. And I have a question about whether this is like supercharging it and making it become overreactive. But let you answer that when we come back from the break. So let's take our first break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook. And before the break, you did a wonderful synopsis of the triggers of EMF and how it messes with our cellular health. I was curious to know, is this influx of calcium, does it overexcite the cell? Is it making it short out and not communicate with other cells? Is there more of an understanding of how that works on a physiologic level?
Yeah, well, a lot of this work was done by Dr. Martin Paul, which, for anyone listening, I would strongly encourage you to look up his work, because he goes into much more depth on this. But it's basically that the extra calcium ions will produce peroxynitrite. And then the peroxynitrite can act to induce the oxidative stress, which there is some excitatory factor here because we know that calcium is an excitatory mineral and magnesium would be the opposite. And magnesium also helps to combat what am I trying to say? It works to regulate the voltage-gated calcium channels as well. So you do have a little bit of that excitatory factor, but it's mostly this peroxynitrite that is formed, which is going to increase that oxidative stress, which then, you know, I think of oxidative stress or oxidants like a pinball. You know, if you're playing with a pinball machine and the ball is just hitting all the sides really rapidly, going around, you know, kind of banging against everything. It's a good analogy to kind of visualize what an oxidant, a prooxidant, would be doing in the body until it neutralizes with an antioxidant. So that could be seen as excitatory in that regard. And it's where these antioxidants come in to help neutralize that. So, you know, if somebody is on their cell phone 24 hours a day and they have Wi-Fi in their house and they're eating fast food and junk food, which so many of us do, you can imagine that there's not only the exposure, but there's no protection at all. It's mineral devoid. It's phytonutrient devoid. And they're just setting themselves up in the perfect storm.
Wow. Now, before the break, you were talking about a lot of different processes, a lot of different causes for sensitivity. What are some of the symptoms of electromagnetic frequency sensitivity?
Yeah. So the symptoms that I see the most would be similar to what I actually experienced. Insomnia, I would say, is a big one. Anxiety is another one. I would say probably those two are the biggest ones I see. And the issue with that is that, well, there could be so many reasons why someone is experiencing anxiety or poor quality sleep. But those are the acute symptoms that I see. Someone is irritable, you know, they can't really focus, they're cranky, you know, the anxiety is unexplainable. In addition to that, they may be getting heart palpitations, they get the ringing in the ears. If somebody is extremely sensitive, they just get pain. You know, they can walk into a room with Wi-Fi and they will immediately feel pain, like stabbing sharp pain, or they'll get brain fog or headaches. Some people experience muscle weakness, depression, a lot of these vague symptoms that most of us chalk up to something else. It's so difficult to make the connection between this device I'm holding in my hand and the anxiety that I'm experiencing now, because we're never away from the device. So we never experience what it's like to not have that symptom. So it's really difficult, especially with the younger population who have, you know, been living with this their entire lives. They've never been away from it. And so they've never really experienced what it's like to not have the symptoms. So those are just, you know, that's a short list. Mm-hmm. There's definitely more, but I would say those are the main ones.
It strikes me that those are some of the main diagnoses that we see in healthcare, and they're all medicated.
Right.
I mean, someone's on two or three medications for their anxiety or medications to help them sleep. And I can't imagine that they're actually suppressing this. And I would think at some points they must augment the symptom. And so you need more of the medication to try to really get control of it. It just seems like you're chasing your tail from what you just described.
Absolutely. That's exactly what's happening. And I find it really, really heartbreaking when somebody goes through the system and they get put on a medication, you know, when in some cases, all they needed to do was to reduce their EMF exposure and they wouldn't be on a lifetime of pharmaceuticals that they have to depend on, in which case a lot of times it's not even solving the issue. Like you mentioned, it's exacerbating the symptoms. And then they may be put on other medications to combat side effects, et cetera. It's devastating to me. And not to say that those pharmaceuticals don't have their place, because they certainly can, and many people are certainly getting benefit from them. But in a lot of cases, it's unnecessary, and it's not addressing the root cause. And there really is a simple solution, which I'm, you know, hopefully, you know, by you doing this podcast, we can help more people to understand that.
You know, it just strikes me that if we could just work together, the medical side and nutritionist, and just have a whole range of people who have a different frame of reference, that we could all work together. But I think the healthcare system paradigm has to change. Instead of treating a symptom, we really have to change our mindset to what's the root cause of the problem. Yeah, the medication has its benefit, but not for everybody. And my thing is, why can't we root out all the things like you just described? If that helps the patient, awesome. If they do need to go to a next level with medication, I mean, just imagine how much money we could save, how much morbidity could be, you know, alleviated. It's just, the system is just broken. I don't think there's any way to describe it. On terms of wearables, because that's a huge thing now, people sleeping with their watch on to monitor how well they're sleeping. Is that adding to this issue?
Yeah. You know, I find the wearables to be such an ironic, you know, discussion, because it's, most of them are for health improvement. You know, these rings and watches and necklaces and things that are tracking your biomarkers, you know, the intent is let's increase our health. Yet we're adding this dose of radio frequency right on our body. And it's just so frustrating to me. Because it's completely unnecessary. And thankfully, there's at least one device, the Oura Ring, which is privy to this concern. And you can actually wear that and, you know, track your sleep, track your fitness markers, your heart rate variability, and you can keep it in airplane mode. So that's excellent. But the large majority of them, of course, don't have that option. And I absolutely am very concerned about it, because it's not only something that's near you, you know, your phone is near you, but this device is on you, and people wear it 24/7. So I'm incredibly concerned about that, as well as these devices like beds. There's many beds now that will track your sleep. And when I test them in people's homes, they're extremely high in radio frequency. I will pick the signal up in the entire house, as well as magnetic and electric fields from the bed. And, you know, there these other devices, I mean, there are radio frequency, or, you know, quote unquote smart tampons, which horrifies me, that, you know, a woman is going to put a radio frequency device in her vaginal canal. I just, you know, it's almost laughable because it's just so horrific. And there's posture devices too. So you can put a little device on your back that sends a signal to your phone when you slouch so that you stand up straight, or you practice better posture, which the intent is good. But imagine that that is sending the frequency directly through your heart, as close to your heart as you can get, to your phone. And I'm so nervous about the long-term effects of these wearables, and I do not recommend them in any cases.
Wow. I mean, I didn't even think, really. I forgot about all those smart beds. Mm-hmm. Imagine just you're lying, you're bathing yourself literally front and back with one of these. I had no idea you can pick the signal up through the house. That's amazing. Yeah. So I would think there's a possibility, if you're sensitive, your cardiac arrhythmias can happen, all sorts of things, because it's just such a, it's not natural.
Right. It's exactly right. You know, these are electromagnetic signals that our bodies have not evolved with. So a lot of people like to say, you know, critics like to question me or question my colleagues about, you know, well, the sun is a form of electromagnetic radiation. You know, what are you worried about? And that is true. The sun is, and the earth has its own Schumann resonance, which is a magnetic field, and there's lightning. So we do have electromagnetic fields that are naturally occurring in the earth, but the ones that we're discussing are all non-native. Our bodies do not know how to handle the input. They are not frequencies that our body has evolved with, and our cells literally don't know what to do with it. So while we do have naturally occurring electromagnetic fields, they're completely different, and they do not have the same characteristics as our man-made EMFs, of which we know without a doubt, because of the many thousands of studies, that there is definitely a biological impact.
I mean, that makes perfect sense. So my segue to that, what you just said, is if you're wearing a wearable and your Wi-Fi's on and you're in a bed that's wired, are these all different frequencies? I mean, it's not one flat. I mean, I don't know. Is it one flat signal, or are these all different depending on what the thing is?
Yes, you're exactly right. They are all different. So, you know, in the building biology community, we like to test for four different fields. So we have the electric fields, which is just coming from the wires that are in our walls. And in the case of a bed, it's going to have to be plugged in. And so we're getting these electric fields onto the bed. And that is a completely different field. It's probably 60 hertz, let's say. A completely different field than the radio frequency that's on the bed, which could be 900 megahertz or 5 gigahertz or, you know, whatever that frequency may be, which is a completely different thing than the electric field. And then we've got the magnetic fields, which the bed could have as well, which is something that we get from current flow. And we measure that in milligauss. And it's a completely different thing than the electric and the radio frequency. And then we've also got dirty electricity, which is an altered sine wave, which is, again, another completely different thing. And that comes from a lot of our energy-saving devices, unfortunately, and things that we plug into our wall that alters that 60 hertz sine wave. So we've got all four of these fields, all different. They all have some interplay with each other, because many devices will have all four of the fields. So it gets really highly complex, but it's just the sheer nature that we live in an electrified world. And so ultimately, you know, we want to reduce our exposure to all of these.
I think that's a great place to take our next break, because that was absolutely mouthful. I don't know how the body can actually jibe with all this stuff hitting it. So let's take our second break. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook, and you can go to her website, wholehomeandbodyhealth.com, and you can read everything that she's written and also learn about her health coaching. There's a shopping tab. It's really a full spectrum website, and I think people need to educate themselves. And this is something it's integral to our longevity and our health. There's no question about it. You know, we just described prior to the break, all of this stuff just literally coming at your body. No wonder people can't sleep. So, you know, we talked about the heart, but what about the brain? How does that get affected? That's a very sensitive organ, and it's electrical, just like the heart is. I mean, is that one of the reasons that we see so much, you know, I wouldn't say, I don't know, damage, that's not quite the best way to put it, but confusion, anxiety, depression, these are real symptoms. Is it because the brain because the brain's being inundated by these energy waves that are hitting it?
Yeah, you know, I think so. You know, I think it says a lot that so many people who have experienced a trauma to the nervous system have instantly become very sensitive to these fields. So I think that there's a lot going on there. You know, it could be, you know, a specific insult to the brain. It could be nervous system dysregulation. It could be both. You know, obviously they go hand in hand. And I think a lot of this depends on the person as well, because it's interesting to me that everyone experiences their symptoms differently. So, you know, if somebody comes and punches you in the arm, everybody's going to feel pain in the arm. But when we're exposed to EMFs, some people can feel it in their brain. Some people will feel it in their heart. Some people will feel it in their muscles. You know, it's really interesting how the symptoms are different. And of course, I think there's some genetic factors to that. And then just coming back to the precursors that somebody may have, you know, where is our bucket overflowing? What mm-hmm. is the system that's the weakest? You know, that tends to be the system where we're going to feel the symptoms most acutely. But let's not forget that there's the long-term impacts too. So just like somebody could smoke, you know, 2 packs a day for their entire life, and they may feel fine for several years until, you know, they get emphysema or lung cancer or COPD or, you know, whatever lung ailment it might be. So, you know, I don't want to forget that in addition to the acute symptoms that someone may feel, somebody who may not feel anything does not mean that they're not impacted by this and that they may not be getting, you know, a more chronic health condition like maybe Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or something that affects the nervous system, you know, years down the road.
Is there anything, or I'm thinking now about the electric cars and being bathed in that as you're driving. Should I be thinking about that in those terms? Is that something that is concerning?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a concern. So I've tested several electric cars, and some of them test pretty well, and some of them don't. Some of the cars are actually shielded. And so like a Tesla, for example, they take care to shield from some of the electric fields. I'm not saying that Tesla is a good option, however, because there's so much more going on in the Teslas with the radio frequencies for the driverless systems and, you know, all of the connected radio frequencies in the car. But not every electric car is going to be significantly worse than a gas-powered car, for example. I've tested a couple of Priuses, Toyota Priuses, which of course are hybrids. But according to my meters, they tested really well, and they didn't actually have an increase in the electric or magnetic fields that I was expecting. However, other cars that I've tested, like a Chevy Volt, for example, did have very high levels. So it's not guaranteed that an electric car is going to be worse than a gas-powered car, because a gas-powered car has all kinds of electrical devices in it as well. But it is something that I think that we should be thinking about, and we should be testing, you know, the next time we're buying a car. I think it's imperative to test it to make sure that you're not getting one that has an increase in any of these four fields, or that you can at least get one that's a little bit better than the others. So testing is key there.
Got you. And what about the ones that have the Wi-Fi integrated?
I mean, I think it's a horrible idea. You know, a lot of them will have Bluetooth, of which you can actually disable. Some of them do not. The newer the cars, I have found, the harder it is to turn off the Wi-Fi, turn off the hotspots, turn off the Bluetooth. The older cars, generally speaking, are easier to do that. But I think it's a horrible idea. Some cars, I know some car owners who have actually gotten into the dashboard, figured out where the antenna is, and physically removed it. That's a little bit risky because you could impact other devices that, you know, might be near that area or on the same circuit or something. But I think it's a horrible idea. And if anybody, you know, wants to avoid that, they really need to put a little extra work into getting a car that doesn't have that feature in it, which can be difficult.
Now, one of the things that you do is you do healthy home assessments, and I guess business assessments as well, right?
Yes. Can assess any building or even land. If somebody's building a new property on a piece of land, it's important to test that too, because there could be all kinds of influences, even though there's not a building there yet. There could be a cell tower in the distance. There could be power lines. There could be all kinds of things that would be impacting that land. So Yeah, we can assess just about anything.
I love that. And now I just drove home, you know, ready for our podcast, and I noticed there's one building where the 5G antennas were right next to the window of this apartment building. I mean, literally, like maybe 3-4 feet, very, very close. What is the safe distance, if any, that you need to, let's say you're building a property, that you need to be away from these towers and these power lines?
That's a great question. And I see that often too, you know, a cell tower literally within feet of a person's window. And it's very depressing for me every time I see that. I'm very worried about the occupants inside that building. So as far as the safe distance goes, there are so many variables to consider, and any of these devices are going to be different in their output, that we don't have a blanket statement for that. So, for example, you could have neighborhood distribution power lines, which usually aren't that much of a problem because they're balanced correctly and they're wired correctly, and we don't get, you know, extended fields off of them that penetrate into a person's home. But sometimes they do. Sometimes they have net current on them or high voltage that can impact a person's home, and we will never know without testing. So same thing for power lines. You know, they're all different. I could be up next to a really, you know, high voltage or high tension power line that looks really ominous, and I don't get a large field off of it. And other times I do. And then when it comes to the radio frequency from cell towers, you know, I live probably about a quarter mile from a cell tower, but I have very little impact inside my home from that tower because of all of the density in between my home and the tower itself. I've got multiple trees and buildings and homes in between me and that tower, so I'm not getting much of an impact. Conversely, I could test a home that's in the country with no neighbors around them. And you know, sadly, I have tested multiple situations like this where the people specifically went to these remote isolated areas to try and avoid these EMF issues. But because there's no density in between them and the nearest cell tower, which could be 2-3 miles away, they're getting a much higher exposure because they're in a direct line of sight of that tower. So there's nothing to impede those radio frequencies in between their home and the tower. So there is no rule of thumb here. You always have to test to see what's going on in the specific area.
Is there any, like, I understand totally, but that line of sight issue, can you, and does it go through concrete? Does it go through windows? Is there any way that you can shield your location, your house from this?
Yes, there's multiple ways to shield, and most building materials will have some reduction. Windows would be the weak point, but thankfully, most homes now, when you're building new, they're installing what we call low E glass or low emissivity glass, which is for energy efficiency because it will deflect some of the UV rays from the sun. That actually does a pretty good job of blocking radio frequency. So do aluminum window screens. Just like you said, concrete, stone, these will all block radio frequency to some degree. If there is, you know, a stick frame building, which most of us have, that doesn't do a whole lot, but you can paint, you can shield with fabric, there's wallpaper. There's multiple different shielding materials now that you can use if you're in a situation where the radio frequency is a little too high. That does need to be done with the guidance of an expert, you know, a building biologist or an EMF consultant, so that they can guide you in the best ways to do it, because it's not really a DIY kind of a situation, because you have to factor in all of the exposures, the electric fields, the magnetic fields, how to ground it properly, you know, the direction of the radio frequency and how it's hitting your house. So you can shield it, but you definitely want to hire an expert to help you with that.
That makes a lot of sense. And we're going to take a break in about 30 seconds, but when we come back, I really want to go over things that what we just started off with, things that you can do, whether that's supplementation, whether that's physically shielding your house, like we just described, things that people can take their power back, because no one, maybe in this day and age, moving may not be an option for people. And we have to think outside the box and make it work. So let's take our last break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living in Solution. Again, we're speaking with Ms. Kathy Cook. And again, her website is wholehomeandbodyhealth.com. People need to go there because it's a wealth of information. I'm looking at her website now. There's EMF protection, supplements, all sorts of things, how you can set up an assessment. And that's my question. I know that you're not, you know, I think you're in, is it Idaho?
Yep, Idaho.
Okay. Do you do anything out of the state?
Yes, I travel quite extensively, actually. You know, most of it in the West, but I've gone to countless different cities and states across the country doing assessments. You know, there are many building biologists across the country. So oftentimes if somebody, you know, contacts me and they're, you know, in Florida or something, or, you know, somewhere really far away, I like to connect them with an expert that I trust highly and that I know personally, or I'm always willing to travel as well. Because, you know, while there are many of us, there's not a whole lot of us. Mm-hmm. So yeah, most of us do travel, because it's really just that important for people to have their homes checked out.
Got you. And you mentioned being able to measure what the EMF is. What do you recommend? Can people do that on their own, where they can actually get something to measure what's going on in their house, their car, their bedroom, to get a preview basically of what's going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, a very good idea for people to measure their own homes, to get a couple of meters and to become proficient in this, because things change and I want people to be empowered and not to have to rely on us all of the time. I will say though, that there's a steep learning curve. And so if you're going to do it, you really need to invest in learning how to test properly, what the measurements mean, and then what to do with that information. And there are loads of, you know, websites and webinars and things online that you can start with to help teach you that. I've done several webinars teaching people how to test, which are online, which I would suggest. Or you can also hire a consultant like myself to help teach you how to do that testing, so that you can then learn, you know, what does all of this information mean? And I do have some recommended meters on my website as well, if people want to check that out.
So what about like your computer, your laptop? Is there something that people can, I know you can, I have like a, almost like a Faraday kind of bag for my laptop, but is that something that people should consider, literally shielding their electronics? If they're not using their cell phone, either turn it off completely, put it on airplane mode, or should they put it in one of these type of EMF protection bags?
Yes, absolutely. So in building biology, we like to say that any reduction is worth achieving. So many times people will tell me, well, what difference does it make if I, you know, shield my house? I turn my phone on and I'm getting 20 Wi-Fi signals from my neighbors. But what people need to understand is the inverse square law, which dictates that the closer we are to a certain device, the more of an exposure that we're getting. So what's inside your own home is by far the biggest exposure that you're getting. So your phone is a little bit deceiving in that its antenna is artificially sensitive. And even though it can pick up a signal from your neighbor's router, does not mean you're really getting that much exposure from it. What people really need to focus on is what's inside my home and how can I reduce what's inside my home? Because that is by far the biggest exposure. The biggest thing anyone can do right off the bat is to hardwire their internet so that they can turn off their Wi-Fi. And believe me when I say that in the many hundreds of assessments that I've done, this is almost always by far the biggest exposure that people are getting. And just by plugging their devices, you can plug in your phone, your laptop, your computer, your tablet, you can plug that in with an Ethernet cord, to your router. And I mean, you're going to drop your exposure dramatically. If there's only one thing that people do, it would be to hardwire their devices. And I do have an article I just posted on my website about exactly how to do that, if anybody wants to check that out.
Should you, is there a way to shield your router so that, you know, you're plugged in everything, everything's landline. Is there a way to also lower what your router is emitting itself?
Yeah. So if you hardwire and you disable the Wi-Fi, then there's nothing coming out of it. It's all just going through the wire. So you don't actually need to shield the router if you're physically going to turn the Wi-Fi off, because now you're just sending the internet through the Ethernet cord.
Oh, that's kind of neat. Okay, got you. And for the dirty electricity, like coming through the actual sockets in the house, is there anything that people can do to minimize that?
Yes. So one of the best things you can do is eliminate sources. So oftentimes, what I find to be some of the biggest sources are things that are just plugged into people's outlets. So for example, I did an assessment a couple months ago where I plugged in my meters. I have an oscilloscope that I'm looking at the sine wave. You know, I'm plugging that in to the kitchen, and I saw one of the highest levels of EMI, electromagnetic interference, that I've ever seen. And I thought it was probably from their solar panels. So I was trying to do some mitigation, and I was walking around the house and said, you know, first, let's unplug everything to make sure it's not an internal source. And sure enough, when I got to the kitchen counter and I unplugged the food saver that was just sitting there, you know, these, they're vacuum sealers, everything went away. It completely, all the dirty electricity went away. It was just from this food saver that was sitting on the counter. They very rarely used it, and it was plugged in. It was not even on. So just by unplugging that device, you know, we brought it down to a safe level.
So, I'm sorry, you said something really interesting. It wasn't on. It was just plugged in, and it was still giving off this type of, oh, wow.
And that is so common. So what I recommend is people unplug the things that they're not using, because you might not know if it's contributing or not. And especially these devices that people rarely use, just keep things unplugged. If you've got an entertainment center with a stereo and a TV and a, you know, gaming system and all these things, put all of that onto a power strip. And then all you have to do is hit the power strip off, and then all of those devices go quiet. And then if you are going to use it, you know, you can turn it on while you use it. But there's no sense in continuing to get exposed to these things constantly just because it's plugged in. So just keep things on power strips, make it really simple for yourself. Keep everything unplugged that you're not using, and you're going to reduce your exposure just by doing that. And you'll reduce your utility bill as well, because you are getting charged. You're paying for that power to be plugged in, even though it's not on.
That's amazing. And, you know, actually, I'm curious, how far does that, I mean, the meter that you used, were you right on top of it, or was it was emanating through the house?
Right. So how the dirty electricity works is that there can be a point source like that food saver in that example. But what it does is it goes back to the panel, the breaker panel. So in the basic theory of electricity is we send the power out on a hot wire to a circuit, and then it goes back to the panel on the neutral wire. And because everything is connected in that panel, what's happening on one wire somewhere in the house is coming back to that panel and then connecting with every other wire in the house. So where you have a device, it could be plugged in, you know, multiple rooms away, but it will impact every part of the house because every wire is connected back at the main panel. So that makes it a little tricky when you've got a point source, you know, plugged in one location. That's why if you unplug it, then you're quieting the entire rest of the house from that source as well.
Wow. I didn't have an idea, but that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Now let's move to the medical side just a little bit. The supplements, which supplements do you recommend to try to calm this, to try to balance whatever is hitting us?
Yeah. So my first recommendation is always magnesium, because magnesium is the ultimate calcium channel blocker. And since we know that, you know, on a cellular level that we're getting this impact from these voltage gated calcium channels artificially opening, magnesium can help to reduce symptoms quite a bit. So that's really important. And then the other recommendation would be antioxidants. Since we know that, you know, the downstream effect of this is oxidative stress, how do we combat pro-oxidants? You know, we hopefully first are consuming a diet rich in antioxidants, but we can also supplement. And one of my favorite supplements is rosemary. So rosemary is a highly protective herb. It's radioprotective. There's a lot of research on rosmarinic acid and radiation, which is really fascinating. So I like to not only cook with rosemary, but to take it as a tincture. And there are capsules as well. And then some other antioxidants that I really like are things like astaxanthin. Melatonin is a really fantastic antioxidant. Of course, there's issues with taking melatonin all of the time, but for somebody who's traveling and crossing time zones, you know, the act of traveling and interrupting your circadian rhythm, I do like it for those circumstances. There's glutathione, which is the body's main antioxidant, which I think is a fabulous supplement. When you get a good quality supplement, because they are not all created equal. Then there's kind of our basics, things like vitamin C, you know, really important antioxidant that a lot of us aren't getting enough of. And you know, there's so many that I like, but those are the ones that I'm recommending most often, depending on the person and their specific situation.
That was an excellent overview. You know, time goes way too quickly, but I want to make sure people know how to reach you and how to get your information on your website.
So people can reach me at my website, wholehomeandbodyhealth.com. My email and my phone number are both right on the website. I also have a YouTube channel where I've got a couple hundred videos of me just testing things. I get into both air quality, mold, and EMF testing. So those are some great introductory videos just about how to use meters, how to test, what certain devices may do to your home. And then I've got a Facebook group called the Environmental Illness and Sensitivity Group, which would be linked to my website too, if somebody can't remember that name. But that's a place where people can just throw questions up, articles, you know, what do you like for this, you know, how about shielding this, you know, your favorite products, that kind of thing. So we've got a lot of lively discussions going on there. And yeah, those are my main outlets.
Ms. Cook, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I really learned a lot. I'm so excited that I can add more to my arsenal for myself and for my patients. So I want to thank you for everything you do.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you getting this message out to so many people. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure and an honor. And I want to thank you and thank everybody for living in the solution.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.